Welcome to another episode of the Let's Get It podcast. I'm your host, Justin Spaulding, and Joel Wallace is here as well on the mic and to chime in when he wants to. Today, we're talking about 30-year underwriting. And really, it's just, it could be longer than 30 years, by the way. It could be 20 years, it could be 30, it could be 60. But what's really interesting is I've always said, don't buy a deal unless you want to own it potentially for 30 years. Mm-hmm. But I've never actually taken the underwriting out 30 years or 40 years or 60 years. And it's really crazy what happens when you do that. Because I don't know, like if you haven't bought a piece of real estate before, one of the biggest things, at least in the state of Wisconsin, is when you buy that piece of real estate, within the first year to 2 years, that real estate tax gets jacked like really high because they can see and figure out the sales price and therefore sure. changes your assessment and whatnot and the new mill rate, right? So there's times where we will buy deals and the real estate tax will double.
Wow.
But then after that, it only goes up like 1% a year. Sure. Some years it's flat, right? So eventually you're going to outpace that again.
Right.
And your value is going to be significantly more than what they've really got it assessed for, right? Until it sells again.
Sure.
Right? And so sometimes it's actually a problem. When we've gone to sell, it's kind of sometimes hurt our value if like the real estate tax is so low. Because like in my hands, it's not going to necessarily go get jacked and double again tomorrow unless I sell it.
Right.
If I sell it, they kind of, again, know the new market price. So that person that's buying that deal from me is going to take that into account for the maximum price that he can pay.
Yep.
Right. So even though I might have it on the books, like based on this NOI, the NOI I have, it might be worth $10 million. But to the next buyer, he might be like, okay, I can only pay $9 million because I know on the reassessment, it's going to hit me. So I can't pay that full. There's $1 million there. Yeah. I get it, but I can't pay it.
Right.
Right. That's happened. Right. So in my mind, it's like, well, man, if you just underwrote these deals to hold them forever, not only does it help us when we're taking these units to like Gold Plus and like rehabbing them and putting $20,000, $30,000, and $40,000 in per door per unit, right? That just a longer hold justifies it even more for us. But when you look at, you know, again, the real estate taxes, 10 years, 15, 30 years, like that's not going to catch up to the value as much if I hold it. But another thing is like, I'm not going to have other fees in there that are eaten out of my net worth either, such as transfer tax fees, closing fees, title fees, attorney fees, legal fees, right? Every transaction you do, there's all these transactional fees. Well, if you just hold assets forever, you don't have those transactional fees either.
Right.
Right. And so I have a deal that I kind of underwrote out to, this one only goes out to 22 years just because it fit on one piece of paper. I could have taken it out. I think I underwrote it like 30 or 40 years, but I took it to 22, just again, fits on the piece of paper. So this deal we're buying for just under $4 million. I've got the stabilized value right around $8.5 million by the time we stabilize it. Now, when I take this thing out to the 5 year mark, it's at $9.5 million, right? So from when we stabilize it, which will take, you know, 8 to 18 months.
What does it mean to stabilize?
It's a good question, Joel. Stabilization means once I've truly, in my words, my definition is when we've truly squeezed all that lemon out and I can't really force any more appreciation, we're fully occupied. We've got pre-leases out there for the people that are moving out. We're not, you know, the people that are moving out, we're not going to have to do big rehabs because a big rehab was already done. We're just going to have to clean it and we're able to rent it out.
It's as closest to a new full building.
New full building as you can get. Stabilized.
Okay.
Right? So good question. Good clarifying question. So the interesting thing is like this building, right? We're buying it. This is a typical building that we buy, right? We're buying it for 3.9 stabilized. Once we stabilize, it's worth 8.5. It'll take us 8 to 18 months to do that. I'm hoping, and I'm thinking like 6 to 8, but you know, I'm going to try to push the boundary here. We'll see. But then over the next, if I just went out to like, you know, 10 years, I've got an $11 million valuation. Right. So only gains like another $2.5 million over that time period. But when I start to take this thing out, like we start to hit just over almost $18 million by year 22. Right. So it's just a lot of compounding. Like the hardest thing about this is finding the deals and then repositioning them or getting them to stabilization.
Sure.
Right. So all the, you know, finding the deals, right? I mean, if you've been trying to buy real estate, you already probably know how hard it can be to find some of these diamonds in the rough.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But it's so worth it because of how much upside is in these diamonds of the rough. Right. So that's why we do it. That's why we play the game. But then the next hardest part is getting those assets repositioned. So that's all the CapEx. That's all figuring out, okay, how many people can I have moved out at once to get in and do the units? Hey, can I remodel these units while people are living in them? Right. There's a lot of logistical things there. How am I making sure that I can make this happen fast? So you got to pay attention to a lot of details there. after it's stabilized, yes, you still need to pay attention to the details. You still need to be able to have leasing momentum and, you know, still need to maintain the property. But hey, it's pretty much brand new product. There's a lot less maintenance. Like whenever we complete a deal, like and stabilize it, our cost per door to maintain it is, it drops like $200 per unit per year. I mean, it's hardly anything just because like everything's so new. Sometimes it's less than that. And so, once you're done stabilizing it and doing all that, after you found the deal, you closed it, you stabilized it, you did the construction, you re-leased it up, you stabilized it, it's now just so much easier to keep going.
Right.
Right. And so, you know, for me, I've started to get to a point where it's like, I want to start to almost sell off less of, especially the stuff that I own kind of by myself, yeah, or just closely held with a couple of friends, family. Maybe I buy them out at some point.
Right.
But like the hard work's been done at those assets.
Right.
Now, the interesting thing is like, as I do this, right, you start to run out of appreciation at some, yep, point. But in theory, if I just keep buying more deals, I can wipe out the taxable income, mm-hmm, I've had from that property and get new depreciation and wipe that taxable hit out. But then the next step is, okay, when do I have to start planning again to do the next?
That's what I was going to ask, yeah.
Right? Capital expenditure, yep, project. So, but for me, when I look at these numbers of how valuable the building gets, I'm someone that I always put money back into my deals anyways.
Yeah.
Right? So if we get to a standpoint of like, you know, we've already refinanced this thing two or three times and we're another 15 years out, 20 years out, I mean, at that point, we're probably going to have at some, you know, there's probably going to be more remodels to do, and mm-hmm, maybe that number is 10. I don't know the exact thing.
Right.
Or the exact timeline on that. But what I do know is I look at the total property value. And typically, I'm going to state this too, is typically my property values that I project out 5 years, 10 years, I've always undershot it. I think, sure, there's only one deal I overshot.
Sure.
I'm always like we bought a deal in 2021 that's 218 units. I had that deal being worth $53 million in 2031. Well, it's worth that right now based on our sales prices on that right now, and we're in 2025. Right, so that's a good example of, yeah, like how I'm pretty with the values very that I put on. I'm pretty conservative, yeah, for the most part.
Yep.
Right. So if I go out and this thing, you know, I said before is almost worth $18 million. It might actually be worth closer to like almost $25 million, right, $30 million by then. Who knows?
Right.
So in my mind, I look at it, I'm like, okay, well, if I hold that long, I can keep refinancing, mm-hmm, and during one of those three or four refinances, I might have to stash some money aside or, you, yeah, know, whatever, right, to be able to start doing the rehab project again.
Right.
But in my mind too, when I do that rehab project again, how I have my rents increase after the first 3 years, I only have my rents increase like 2.5%, 3%.
Okay.
So somewhere in there, I think I'm going to miss a year where it's like, okay, odds are,
yeah,
we can probably with that, mm-hmm, rehab project, can we raise rents again a, right, little bit more substantially? You know, some of it's to be determined. But in my mind, when I look at, you know, the real estate taxes flattening out, right? Mm-hmm. There's always that big increase. And then if they flatten out, if they stay flat, you know, for 20 years, the amount of extra cash that I get from that is huge in cash flow and, yeah, on my actual value of my value of the building, of how the bank will underwrite it. So
have you held a property long enough to have to rehab it twice?
No, not really.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we're, Whispering Pines is one that we've had for like 10 years now, but like, and we're rehabbing the entire thing now. But, sure, but like the way that we do things now is so much more different. Thorough, yeah, so much more different. Like, yeah, back then, I think we had hardly any. I mean, we're putting $3 million into it now. Like,
right,
back then, I think we put like $500,000 into it. So it's like nothing.
Oh, wow.
But back then, I thought like $2,000, right, would give me a brand new unit. Right. Right. And, right, now I'm not worried to stick like $20,000 in, yeah, or whatever, to yeah, make it right.
Yeah.
Right. So the whole ball,
yeah, the, you know, model, the whole thing just changed. Is totally different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think we'll know based on like the wear and tear. I think that we'll start to know over the next, like, on stuff that we've already completed over the last couple of years, I think we'll start to know in the next like three, four, five mm-hmm, years. Okay. This is like, you know, kind of the wear and tear it's had. This, yeah, is how much maybe things have changed that we need to upgrade or, you know, whatever. But,
and at some point it becomes just an aesthetic change.
Yeah.
Where it becomes, okay, that's just very dated, yeah, now. I mean, it could be, yeah, 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
And it's a very dated product, which, yeah, you don't necessarily want anyways. Yeah.
Right. So it's trying to figure that, yeah, out. And I don't know. I don't have the answer to that, but I know, like, you know, at some point it's the cash is not the problem, it's the deal flow.
Yeah.
That's the problem at some point. So in my mind, I'm like, why are we gonna I'm thinking like, why are we gonna give this deal up? Now, right, there could be like an unforeseen tax situation, there could be, you know, whatever, some unforeseen situation. But like these last handful of deals that I've bought, like, it's crazy. when you take it out on paper and go out 30 years, 45 years, 60 years, just to see the value. I did it on another one that I don't have here, but like I initially projected to sell that deal, and it's one that I own like 80% myself, and I could just buy out the other partners or whatever if someone wanted out. But like I did initial, like I think it was a 5 or 7 year projection, and I think at that point in time it's worth like $13 million. But sure. Then I took it out to, again, 30 years or something like that, and it was like a $36 million deal at that point. And I'm just like, if I don't need the money,
right?
If I'm always buying anyways, why not potentially just hang on to this and then, right. and get some of the benefits of holding on long term, such as, again, a lower percentage of revenue paid on real estate taxes. Mm-hmm. A lot of times insurance too. Because like if I have a deal for a long time that's not had any insurance claims, I'll get more favorable insurance typically.
Right.
If it changes hands, typically that next buyer, the newer buyer, typically there's a little bit of a surcharge almost, or a built-in fee or something. Like you're paying more for that.
Yeah.
I mean, I know a deal that we just sold. Like that person is paying more on that insurance, and they have a big portfolio too. They're paying more on that deal than what we were paying.
Sure.
And it's almost like you get a benefit from the insurance company of not having any claims and you owning it long term.
Right. That's interesting, because it definitely changes the thought process behind what you're buying. And how does that affect when you're looking at a property or you're looking at a deal versus having the 5-year flip mindset?
Well, I think it only helps us, because like it justifies in my mind, like if the windows are questionable, it's like, mm-hmm. oh, like we're only holding it for 5 years. Do we want to stick in
right.
the, you know,
yeah.
cost to do windows when yep. they could make it, but right. if I'm going to hold this for 15 years, let's do the windows.
Right.
Let's just do the siding. Let's just do it. I'm not going to have to worry about anything.
No. And it's going to be cheaper to do it all at once.
Right.
Always. Right.
100%.
Always.
100%.
The more you can do at one time, the more cost effective that whole process yep. is. And like you said, just the peace of mind of you don't have to sit there and try to factor something else in 2 years from now 100%. Or anything big. And you allow that property to kind of just run.
Well, and then like the tax game as well. If I sell, I got to find a 1031. There's mm-hmm. timelines there. If I refi,
yeah,
there's no taxable event on a refinance.
Right.
So if I this 64 unit, if I got $2 million, if I can pull that $2 million back out and still own the asset and still get cash flow, right? And now I can go put that $2 million to work somewhere else.
Right.
And if I, so like I get to a point where like if I own 60 deals myself, every single month I've got a refi going on almost. I'm pulling money out cash free.
Sure.
Or tax free.
Yep.
I just go put it into the next deal. Right. And people are like, oh, I'll get 60 deals. Well, shit. Like, look where we're at now compared to 10 years ago. That's about where we're at. Like, you can get there.
Yeah.
Right. But okay. So what? If you go get 5 deals and once every year, because like just if you have a 5-year term loan, right? So like once every year, if you have 5 deals that you buy over the next 5 years, now it's like once every year you got a refi going on.
Right.
If you can pull out 40 grand, 50 grand, 100 grand every single year.
Yeah.
Right.
That's tax free.
Tax free.
Yeah.
So every dollar that you get that way, basically multiply it by two. I always tell my NFL, the guys that I talk to in the NFL, I'm like, look, if you make $10 million a year, in real estate, I only got to make $5 million a year to have the equivalent.
Yeah.
Because I'm not losing 50% of my money to taxes.
Right.
You're losing 50% of your money to taxes, plus there's probably another 2% going to your agent, plus there's another, you know, whatever.
Yep.
Right? If I'm pulling $5 million from a refi, that's like $10 million to an NFL player.
Right.
That's like $10 million coming from some candy business.
Yep.
Every dollar that you make in real estate because of depreciation and because being a full-time real estate person, you can make an election in your taxes that you file, that your passive losses will offset your earned your active income.
Sure.
Right. So a football player, if their wife, I mean, if you're an NFL player and you're a baller, man, if you're making $10 million a year, mm-hmm. this would be a baller move right here. Have your wife be a real estate agent.
Yeah.
Make sure she sells like one house per month, and she has more than 400 hours, 600 hours in per year doing serious real estate. She can, you guys, if you're on one tax return, you can elect to be a full-time real estate person. Now you can take your money, put it into real estate as much as you can, right now. This is not necessarily advice, right? But this is what I would do.
This is not financial advice. Like,
Disclosures.
Yeah, don't
this,
come at us.
This is like what I would probably do. I'd dump all my money into property. I'd get that depreciation. I'd not have to pay any tax on any of my, because it would be wiped out. Because my wife is a full-time real estate person, this happens for me and my wife. My wife, being a dentist, she's considered full-time real estate because we're on the same tax return and I'm a full-time real estate person.
Interesting.
So our passive losses offset her earned income on the taxes. Right? So now, if you're an NFL player, again, you there's a lot of guys that are like, well, I can't do that much with that much. I can't use all the depreciation to offset my earned income. You can if your wife's a full-time real estate person. Get some tax advice, but I'm 99% sure because we do it. Why can't you do it?
Right.
You can wipe out. You know how much money you save as an NFL player if you're paying $5 million? If you make $10 million a year, you're paying $5 million in taxes.
Yeah.
And if you can set the... Now, you can't just go buy any piece of real estate. You got to buy the right real estate because you can't have the real estate go under because that's where you just put your salary.
Yeah.
Right? So, but if you found the right... If you got invested in the right deals and you just put all $10 million into that thing and just lived off what it paid you, right? And then took the tax benefits you get there to wipe away all your earned income, that's how you... It's cheat code.
Sure.
Without cheating.
Right.
It's 100% legal.
It's the tax code.
It's a tax code.
Learn the game, play the game.
What are your thoughts, Joel? What are your thoughts about holding long term?
I think I think two things. One, I think most of the people that we have had on the podcast so far that have invested in real estate, their number one regret is selling the property.
And even if it's not a regret, because I have that too. I'm like,
correct. I shouldn't say regret.
But, I shouldn't have sold that property. I don't regret it.
No.
But I'll sit here today and be like, shit, I shouldn't have sold that property.
Right. But at the same time, depending on where you are in your process, you have to scale.
Yeah.
And you can't, and sometimes selling you can't is the just best way necessarily to do that, sit on your two duplexes that you started with.
Yes.
You having those right now would be an anchor more than it would be of benefit.
But if they listen to the podcast that we just shot a little while ago about operating your real estate, and if they operate those duplexes, four units, in a way that they turn them around with speed, they would build enough equity where they could go out and double the real estate portfolio every single year without raising 1 cent of investor money.
Right.
They could go from 2 or 4 units this year and be at 4 or 8 the next year, 8 to 16, 16 to 32, right? I mean, literally, if you're at a duplex right now,
right?
If you've not squeezed out every dime of, if you've not invested as heavily as you can back into that asset to make that asset worth as much as you possibly can and have not operated with speed, go find our content about operating with speed and listen to that and go and do that, because what that will allow you to do is bring, if you think that asset's going to be worth whatever it's going to be worth like 7 years from now, go do whatever needs to be done to that asset and improve it, get the rents to where they should be at market. Mm-hmm. That bring that value forward to today. Now what you can go do is refinance that deal.
Right.
And if it's a duplex or a four unit, whatever, let's just call it a four unit. If it's a four unit, you refinance that deal, you're still going to own that deal. You're still going to have that deal build equity for you, passively pay you cash flow, but you can go out and buy another four unit.
Right.
Okay. Now keep operating again. You're going to be able to go double your portfolio again the next year. Leonard Brady from our first podcast, go listen to Leonard Brady podcast. Do exactly what that guy's doing. He's doubled every single year and he's about to make another double this year doing exactly what I'm talking about.
Right.
He's forcing the appreciation of these properties with speed. Leonard's in there doing remodels to units that are occupied.
Right.
He's doing the flooring. He's doing the doors. He's doing everything while the cabinets, while the unit's occupied, just like what we've started to do.
Yep.
We've started to do occupied remodels as well. And again, what that allows you to do, so even though you're starting at a duplex or four unit, like if you do it right, you could hold on to that thing forever and still double every single year without any other investor money, and you hold on to that thing forever. And 10 years from now, if it's a four unit that you own, so 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, 128, 356, 780, I rounded up, 1,400, 1,560. 10 years from now, you're at 3,000 units.
Right.
There's people that have done that.
Right.
And you could be the next one. If you have that long-term mindset, have do your 30-year underwriting, and operate these things with speed, you can go do it.
Yeah. And I tell you, this would be a great episode to do again sometime where we really whiteboard it and you really start with a duplex and Good. You just break down the math and you kind of go through it play by play by play by play from start to 10 years.
Sure.
And what does that look like? I mean, we've heard the saying a million times before. It's like you drastically overestimate what you can accomplish in 1 year, but drastically underestimate what you can accomplish in 10.
For sure.
You know, and just the bite-sized pieces year in, year out, where you can be. I mean, you've talked about it numerous times where it's the goals that you had set for your 10-year mark that you crushed in 3.5, 4.
Yep.
You know, I mean, you've doubled every year, over year, over year, over year, over year.
Sure. I mean, on average, yeah, we've doubled. Nuts. On average, we've doubled every year.
Yeah. It's just that consistency and I think that speed.
Now, from last year to this year, we will not hit a double. But again, if I talk the last 10 years, there's been years we haven't hit a double, but it ends up, there's years where we also 3X, right? So like
it averages.
It ends up yeah. to being an average. But what I think is coming over the next, like, 3 to 5 years based on some of these things that we're looking at now and how we're operating now and operating with speed and looking at these things long, long term, I think there's a chance that we're going to have years where we like 3X consecutive, like year have two, year 3 year. Yeah. Where there'll be 3 to 5X years over the next couple of years. And so it's just, we're kind of that tweener, like how we've gotten to where we're at today is not necessarily exactly what's going to get us to that next step. And that's where mm-hmm. I'm kind of at right now and where mm-hmm. I've been at about the last 12 months. And right now with what we've bit off the last 12 months though, and how we're operating it, how we're doing it, it's going to definitely set up the next decade because it's going to be bonkers when after buying some of these deals that I've bought in the last like 8 months, it's going to be crazy to be able to get my money out over the next couple months and out in the next year where I'm getting $2 million back, where I'm getting $1 million back, I'm getting $500 back. Right. And now I kept all these assets while still getting that money back cash tax free. And now I can go put that money to work and then rinse and repeat with because of how fast we're turning these projects around. Rinse and repeat in that new one that I'm buying with those recycled funds.
Right.
So, yeah, I think we can. I think that's what we should do, actually. I think next week or the week after we should whiteboard this out because I can show you. I mean, I can show you. And I'll do a little bit of homework ahead of time to be able to be prepped for that to have it. And like, again, what if interest rates go up? What if they do?
Doesn't matter.
Like, interest rates go up for a reason. And a lot of times that's because, like, again, there's inflation or whatever. And so if there's inflation at some point, that means your rents are also going up too. So, it's gonna all even out. And these value add deals, there's still so much arbitrage. Because, so again, if I'm buying deals for $70,000 to $150,000 per door, and if I'm putting $20,000 to $40,000 into these units, that means I'm all in between $90,000 and $190,000 per unit.
Sure.
Building units brand new right now is pushing $275,000 to $300,000 per unit.
Correct.
And unless a lot of red tape gets cut, that's only going to get worse.
Yeah. Oh,
right?
Oh yeah.
There's only more and more red tape that's coming out.
Yeah, like, we're lucky if we hit around 250 a door.
Right.
Is on our average.
Right. And so I just don't see and you guys control a lot, so you can probably wipe out some of your costs if you're talking like for your own stuff. I don't know if you're talking your own stuff or someone else.
For some of our main developers.
250.
Their target is 250.
But they're probably at scale though too.
Yes.
How many units are they putting up when they're talking 250 a door?
Oh, 500.
Right. All right. So if you don't have that scale, if you're looking to put up a 30 unit.
Oh yeah.
Like 275, 290, right?
Close to three. Yeah, for sure.
And again, this is talking like Wisconsin. This is not talking, you know, if you're talking downtown Seattle or downtown New York, okay, you're
whole different
$1.5 million a door. Maybe more, $2 million a door. But you know, so like in markets that are like secondary, tertiary markets, there's a huge opportunity and there's a lot of arbitrage in those price ranges of where we play. And so if you're able to operate these the right way, if you're able to go out and have the courage to buy these deals, I think that you're in a relatively safe, like over the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years, it's a safe place to be because of, again, how much of a shortage there is of, you know, good quality housing that is still somewhat affordable. Again, like our rents are not like... they're not crazy low, but they're not crazy high. But they're also getting a brand new product. So for brand new products with attached garage, like right now with what we're doing across the street here, $1,690 a month. Okay. But they're getting attached garage, in-unit laundry, and it's all brand new on the inside. And it's about to be all brand new on the outside too.
Right. It's how much, much was it?
$1,690.
Yeah, it's not bad at all.
The units are anywhere from 975 square feet up to 1,200 square feet. We're starting to get the question, why are they all the same? Just because it's easier on a marketing end right now. We'll probably change that at some point. But you know, just right now to build momentum, everything's $1,690 for the rent.
Is that one bedroom, one bed, one bath? Is
two by one.
Okay.
So it was initially built in the early 90s, so you don't have the two by two, but it's two bed,
one bath. But still, two bed, one bath. Yeah. That is not bad at all.
Attached garage. Private entrance.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Private entrance. Like, not even an apartment. It's a private entrance townhome.
Yeah.
So, well, but what I'm trying to say, and what Joel is saying, we're in a competitive spot where, like, we can offer something that's of nice. It's not, like, super luxurious by any means, but it's a nice. I would still go back and live there any day.
Yeah.
It's a nice spot and it's affordable. So like that type of product though, there's a lot of arbitrage for the people that know what to look for, know how to do it and know how to operate it. And if you can have a long-term outlook, you'll be in a good spot.
Mm.
Joel, anything else?
That's all I got. That was good.
Awesome. Guys, well, thanks again for joining the Let's Get It podcast. We'll talk to you next time.
One last thing. Mastermind.
Oh, my mastermind.
Yeah, let's talk about the mastermind. Because, I mean, essentially, like, doing that, video is going to be another, it's like a mini micro mastermind breaking that out over 10 years.
Yeah, I think I've kind of had thoughts lately. I'm like, man, I don't know, this mastermind November 4th, 5th, and 6th might be the last mastermind I do. I don't know for sure yet. But I'm expecting to sell it out, and there'll be 25, 30 people there. Basically, we're talking. It starts on the 4th. November 4th at around 5 p.m. There's one session that night. Then it's all just a networking event. We have dinner together. The second day is all day. We grind it out. It's a lot. It's a lot of stuff I get into. There's nothing that I don't cover. There's nothing that I won't answer. That night is a VIP dinner. Then the last day, we're done by noon. There's a VIP ticket, an executive ticket. You get about 30 different tools that we use. Plus, you're going to get a year of mentorship. You get into our private Facebook group. And then on top of that, you get into our weekly calls. So as you go and take what you learned at the mastermind, right? And the cool thing is like, if you buy the mastermind ticket now, we're sitting in May, early June. Well, if you're listening, it's probably June. But like, we're sitting in June right now, and mastermind's not till November. You get into our weekly calls starting right now.
Oh, wow.
Which is nice. You get access to our online courses right now, which is nice. But then, you know, obviously after the mastermind, you get continued help there. So as you go out and implement what you've been learning, you're going to, no matter what someone teaches you the first time or the first couple times you hear it, you're still going to go out and have a struggle. You're going to get snagged up, and we're there to help you through it.
Right.
So you bring it to our weekly call, you bring it to our private Facebook group, and we're going to help you troubleshoot and get you on your way. I'm 100% satisfaction guarantee. So if at any time you're pissed off, whatever, want your money back, we'll do it. I haven't had anyone hit me up on that offer yet. Yeah. And so people like what they're doing. We've had a lot of people have some awesome, awesome results. Some of them have been on this podcast. Mm-hmm. And we hope to see you guys there. You know, hit me up on Instagram if you want the links to the ticket. Again, pretty close in the, you know, in person, intimate type setting with, you know, 25 people or so there. So email justin@spaldinggroup.com. Hit me up on Instagram, LinkedIn, you know, Facebook, wherever, if you're interested in a ticket, and we will get you hooked up. Thanks, everybody. Sweet.